Today we have two items on the agenda. One is a briefing by the Department of Military Veterans and the Department of Health on the health benefits for military veterans. And we also hope to do a follow-up on the list of beneficiaries for housing allocation, or the housing benefit, as it were. Members will recall that we had a presentation on the housing benefit some weeks back. So on that one, it will just be an update since we last met. But for today, it's just a briefing. It's a briefing on the health benefits for for military veterans. That's item number one. And then item number two is the consideration and adoption of budgetary review and recommendation report. And the report was circulated, I think, yesterday or day before yesterday, to all members, and I hope that that would save us time, because we not have to read it. It's simply just launch into the discussions, and that was taken as read. So those are the two issues essentially for today. And before I ask the department to address us on the first item, let me first welcome the Acting Director General of the Department of Military Veterans, General Mukwebi. Thank you very much, sir. And and with him is the Deputy Surgeon General representing the South African Military Health Service, yes. And that's Major General Dr. Ndlovu. General, welcome to the meeting. Mm-hmm. Yes, and of course we welcome all the officials from the Department of the of Military Veterans to this meeting. And on the apologies, I note the apology of the Minister of Defense and Military Veterans, Honorable and Mapisa Ngabula. I also note the apology of the Honorable Leader of UDM, General Bantu Holomisa. I also note the apology written on behalf of Inkosi R.N. Qebekhulu, MP, who advises that he too is unable to be at this meeting. So these are the three apologies. The last apology I want to note that came in this morning is the apology of the Deputy Minister of Defense and Military Veterans, Honorable Ma Thabang Makwetla. He will join us a bit late. In other words, he can walk in at any minute from now. So this then takes care of the apologies that we have so far received. Colleagues, I'm looking at you on my left. Are there any apologies that I might not have picked up? No, there's no apology from my left. On my right, General, are there any apologies from your side that I might have missed?
Thank you, everyone, Chair. There are no apologies from the Department of Veterans. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That concludes the apologies. We don't have the minutes because we are dealing with new and, let me say, fresh items for this meeting. And So, all right. I say this is like a continuation, so to speak, because the first part was dealt with previously. We may have to pick up on it in terms of just an update, you know, high-level update on the allocation, housing allocation, and then the new item being the health one, the health benefit. Right, General, over to you. But before you come in, General, and so that we don't go back to this discussion ever again, let's look. I asked the committee secretary to print out two very important documents for this meeting. One is the Act, the Military Veterans Act 2011. And then two are the regulations to the Act. So I've touched both documents. And then on page, so the department exists solely to service the military veterans. And the definition of who a military veteran is on page 4 of the Act. I just want to read the definition for everyone, and it's law and we're not going to debate it. Okay, it says it means any South African who A, rendered military service to any of the military organizations, statutory and non-statutory, which were involved in all sides of South Africa's liberation war from 1960 to 1994. So the first definition category refers to, the first category in terms of the definition is all military formations, be they statutory or non-statutory between the period of 1960 and 1994. The second category, that is B, is those that served in the Union Union Defense Force before 1961. The Union, I think it's from 1912 to 1961. The Defense Force, that's the, that was the Defense Force of the time, and then C, it refers to South African citizens who became a member, a South African citizen who became a member of the new South African National Defense Force after 1994, okay? And so that takes care of those who retire from the current defense force. And then it goes on to say, and has completed his or her military training and no longer performs military service. It means that if you are still a member, you are not entitled. You can't be claimed, you can't be called a military veteran. So must have retired from service. Provided that this definition does not exclude any person referred to in paragraph A, B, or C who could not complete his or her military training due to an injury sustained during military training or a disease contracted or associated with military training. All right. So that takes into account who a military veteran is. All right. Let's go to the benefits. Benefits are on page 6 of the document, and it's item number, it's clause number, let me say section number 5. Benefits to relating to military veterans. 1, the benefits relating to a military veteran are the following. A, compensation to military veterans who sustained disabling injuries or severe psychological, neuropsychiatric trauma or who suffer from a terminal disease resulting from their participation in military activities. 1B, dedicated counseling and training to military veterans who suffer from serious mental illness, post-traumatic stress disorder, or related conditions. And the benefit C, memorializing fallen military veterans. Benefit D, education, training and skills development. Benefit C, facilitation of employment placement. Benefit F, facilitation of or advice on business opportunities. Benefit G, subsidization or provisioning of public transport. And benefit H, pension. Benefit I, access to health care. Benefit J, bureau. And benefit K, and bureau, sorry, housing. That's benefit J, sorry, benefit J is housing, and K is bureau support. So this then talks to the benefits that are available to a military veteran. And but there's a means test applied to all these benefits. In other words, can't remember which section that talks to the means test. In other words, it's not just generally available. You must have So there's a means test. The department will talk to it if they are able to refer to it, just on the means test. And then the last page I wanted honorary members to look at is attached to the Gazette. Is the last four pages. It's from page 15 of the Gazette. Page 15 of the Gazette. This is the basically the application for accessing benefits as articulated in section 5 of the Military Act, 18 of 2011. All right. So in other words, the only way you could, the route to benefits goes via this form. It was gazetted on the 19th of February, 2014. You can see it's just a very comprehensive. it's a detailed form, so to speak. And towards the end of the form, it requires, I think, section C of the form, documents required. It requires an ID document, proof of residence, proof of registration on the database, proof of spousal dependent relationship, birth certificate of dependence, proof of income, proof of registration in the relevant institution if applying for education support, CV if applying for facilitation of employment, outstanding mortgage loan if applying for a housing benefit, demobilization records, certified personal register or services certificate if applying for bureau support, and the deceased is not on the registered database, the next one is actual bureau cost, death certificate, liquidation and distribution number if applying for reimbursement of bureau cost, and the identity card issued by the department. And then following that, it's basically like a sole declaration, it's an affidavit confirming that the information supplied is to the best of your knowledge correct. And then it goes on and on and on. Essentially this then, it talks to the military veterans that we are meeting about to discuss just one benefit out of the benefits that are listed on the thing is the health benefit. With this, over to you, General. Thanks.
Thanks, sir. Good morning again to honorable members and colleagues. Next slide. Now, Chair, what we're going to cover, we're going to just have a sense of background information and also look at the means of accessing the healthcare services by the military veterans. We'll look at the costs involved in terms of providing this service to the state, address the issue of the challenges which we are faced with, and how, in fact, we are also trying to mitigate those known challenges. Next slide. The purpose of us being here, Chair, is just to make sure that we update you, since we've been at least interacting with this number of benefits, but mainly today it's covering the military veterans have access to services. Next slide. Well, as indicated in terms of the Act, Chair, we'll go to Section 5, Subsection 1, Sub 1 in Roman figures. And this is where it's coming in terms of the Act, where it's stated that military veterans must get this benefit. Now, how this is expected to be done, it's expected that it should be easy for military veterans to access these medical services. It should be easy. That's one aspect of this. And also it covers from mainly all aspects of services, from primary healthcare, secondary and tertiary healthcare services. And of course, Chair, I won't be going to the regulation as you have at least alluded to. Next slide. Now, when we then came into existence as a department, we realized that we expected at least to render this service to the military veterans, but we didn't have the means to do that. The easiest way, because we are a child of the Department of Defense, we had to go back to from where we came from, because we once a directorate and we once received those under the Department of Defense. So we went back to Department of Defense first, we requested them, then we entered into an MOU. They agreed under the Department of Defense, then of course, with General next to my immediate right, who's coming from SAMS, they were the ones who were expected to assist us in this. So we had, now this was in 2015. It's probably correct to say that MOU hasn't been reviewed. So we can then understand that when we started, it was 2015, we were new in this field, and we have not reviewed that because we have learned quite a number of, at least lessons out of that interaction. And SAMS, they are the only sole provider of this service to the military veterans. And of course, as you would know, in terms of where they are, in terms of their footprint. But again, they are working with the Department of Health and also using the private healthcare facilities so that our military veterans can access these services. Ours was a process that they do the administration, then they invoice us. And of course, if one looks at the invoice, it's moving from all that direction finally to us. That also is one of the issues we are handling. Sometimes military veterans on their own will just go direct to the hospital and then look for a service. And of course, when they do that, since they were not referred by any doctor from SAMS, then they then have to pay for those services. And if they didn't go through that process of referral and they do it on their own, then of course we don't reimburse them. That's what is the state of affairs in regard to those who just go there on their own. Next slide. If then we look at the question of presently, when we look at the database, the number of military veterans were 79,509. And out of that, when we then look at the two bodies of military veterans, that means the statutory forces and the NSF, 76%, that means the majority will be coming from the statutory forces, and then 24% will be coming from the non-statutory forces. Now, when the individuals then apply for this benefit, then they come into our database of the healthcare service. And then we get to know that at least these are the people who are supporting. Since we started, the figure therefore is 17,748 of military veterans up to today, which if we take the total number is about 22% of military veterans who are receiving the service. Out of that 17,748, 9,947 are NSF members, which makes it 11% of the figure of 24% of military veterans. So this is where we are in terms of who's getting what and how it looks like. Next slide. Just to look at the database itself and also begin to look at the various formations, and then it starting from APLA and then going down, and then these are the figures in terms of those who have managed to authorize as a department to access this service vis-a-vis the number of those again per force in total, which gives us that 79,000, so that we can refer to different formations, their representation in the national database, which gives us a grand total, and then how many of those performed, and which gives also the sense. The question probably might arise in terms of what we classify as unknown. That 371. Next slide. Just to probably talk to the unknown before the question arises, who is these people who are not known. Somewhere in 2011, the minister issued out a directive to say, let's do a pilot project and begin to assist the military veterans. So once that was said, then we ended up with a figure of about 2003 military veterans who applied. Then out of that, of those who applied, then 1,632 were then assisted, they could access, and then they were registered. But there was no details of who these people are except their names, and then they were assisted. Then they ended up in the database. Now, we've been trying to locate them, trying to find out who they are. We are not succeeding yet. But then we have we have established a task team with the SEMS, where we said, since they are the custodian of the records of the patients, obviously these patients, when they were going there and for consultation, they must have registered themselves. And then we say, saying to SEMS, don't give us only the list of who attended, but we're looking at the details of those individuals. So that is still work in progress in terms of trying to access those records from them. I just wanted to explain that. Next slide.
So can I repeat the figures? It was the
371. Oh, the original figure. It was 2003 military veterans who applied.
Oh, okay.
But out of those, 1,632 received. And then out of that figure, then there is this figure of 371 of those who received, whose details are not visible to us. So we then linking up with SEMS to try and determine who are these people. Then the approach going forward is that if they're not coming forward and we cannot determine who they are, we're going to then at least take them out of the system. Even if it transpired that they were not necessarily military veterans, then also we'll take them out of the system.
So what is the time that
General, are you want to commit? Thanks. Next slide. Now, when we look at the cost of the numbers of the people who have at least accessed the facilities of SEM, for this financial year, we're looking at 65 million. And what has transpired, trying at least to look at the figures of those who have applied right through and have allowed access, that's 17,000. We have at least made a sense that on a yearly basis we tend to have a figure of around 5,792 who then on a yearly basis at least we know that they will be going and accessing these services. And as for 18-19 financial year, in terms of what we have paid to SEMS, it's about 107 million. Now, because of the management of the system, we sometimes end up with a receipt coming a little bit after the financial year, and therefore we are required to pay services which have been rendered in the previous financial year, and then we refer to these as accruals. And then our experience in the last financial year, our accruals have accumulated up to 12.1 million. Chair, as DMV, we approached the Minister and the Chief of Defence Force, and we said, look, these accruals, when we pay to the SEMS, DOD, there is not really use for them. They're taking them somewhere. So we were requesting a principal to write them off, that if we receive the receipt late in the next financial year and they have not been processed, then SEMS already has covered that, so we don't pay them. Well, the chief and the minister were at least amenable to this, and in the previous financial year, were able at least to discount some of those accruals. But of course, the general on my immediate right doesn't necessarily seem happy with that arrangement. But this is what now we are, as you say, also looking at this financial year, see if we can also write off those accruals. In our layman's understanding as SEM, as DMV, we are not well versed with the calculations of how much it should cost per person, per year. But we've came up with a figure of 3,662. But then using the figures of 18-19 financial year of what we have paid and the number of people who have received this service, we seem to be saying average it's costing us about 16,350. Of course, if then our calculation and our estimation are at that figure and we then experience this, there's going to be a little bit of, in terms of planning for budgeting, there's going to be a challenge, so we might be under budgeting. This is what we've come to realize. So this is one of the ways to try at least to improve our planning tools. Of course, we have asked SEMS also to confirm whether in fact we are right when begin to come up with this kind of averages so that we can do a proper planning going forward. Since we started in the 14-15 financial year up to date, that's amount of money we have paid to SEMS. 340.6 million. Next slide. Just trying to then go back since we started 2011, there is that 2011 experience, so we also including it in this exercise. And then we are saying that 17,748, this is what we have, but other people have been passing on. And then out of that, we've got a figure of 1,147 which have passed on. But if you look at that, including those who have passed on, then we have a figure of 18,895 military veterans. And we're also able to indicate per province what's happening. Again, that figure, Chair, which comes up as unknown, which is also quite a big figure, speaks to the military veterans, because in the migration of the database from the DOD to DMV, it was just a name list of people presented in an Excel spreadsheet, but no files of these individuals. And these are the individuals who are even at least accessing us. They are a challenge. We are looking at that with the DOD. So we'll be able, when we come back, to speak about the database later on to indicate who these people are. In terms of, are they in the CPR list? Are they not in the CPR list? How did they end up there? Do we have their files and details and updated? So this is what we're working on. Next slide. Now, if we look at the deceased, again, former force, this is how they look like. Thank you. Next slide. We are faced with challenges, Chair. One of those is transport of these members to access these facilities, starting at sick base in the various provinces, and then from sick base to the military hospitals. There's a challenge in terms of transport. SEMS is not in a position to help us at all times with what's required. And also, in the past, they used to have some doctors contracted by themselves in the various provinces. And then it was easy for us to allow our military veterans to go to those doctors. But those doctors have got their own experiences with us through SEMS in terms of being paid in time. And therefore, they are reluctant. So therefore, these then tend to force us to enforce military veterans to move from various provinces to either Cape Town, either Bloemfontein, or the Pretoria from all over South Africa. Then that transportation part of it becomes a challenge. Once they have paid for that transport, sometimes they want us to pay them back, then a reimbursement, which becomes difficult in terms of the budgetary process, but these are the things we are looking at. And with SEMS, in terms of the task team, we have asked SEMS to assist us about how best to, at least, manage that gap. Also, when finally these veterans end up in the hospitals, especially SEMS, then they get to understand that there are resources required, which is medication or any appliances or any aspects which is required, which are not available within the SEMS facilities, then that also becomes a challenge. Therefore, they might probably, some of them, default in terms of their medication because they cannot pay and buy for whatever themselves. If they do buy, then again, we need to look at reimbursement. So that creates another challenge in administration. And of course, they've been seen by the doctors, but there's no medication in the SEMS facility. That's one of the challenges we're managing. Next slide. For us as a department, we not necessarily structured, and not only structured, but capacitated and the right capability to manage and administer this function. And therefore, it leads to a challenge where as a department, we are not really, in terms of this community, to say, the profile of this community looks like this, and this is the kind of the common ills they are suffering from. And therefore, how then do we even prevent some of these and try to manage them before they turn out to be something serious? But with SEMS, we've also requested in terms of the task team that they must assist to say how best to have a sense of what actually is the profile of this community of military veterans. SEMS themselves, they are also having their own challenges because they're managing their regular force, including the reserve force. So they've got that portfolio of patients in terms of the serving members. And then we are becoming an add-on. So for them, we are not the primary concern. We are the secondary concern. But for us, we believe that we are more primary than they think they are because we've been there. Now we're just old. We need to be treated with care, and we need first preference. But they disagree with us. But I always remind them that this department, in fact, is their future. All of them, they are going to end up as military veterans in one way or other. But they seem not to believe me because they are still serving there. Next slide. And just click on that slide. When the task team, which was set up by the minister some time back, was also looking at this issue, there was a view that we might probably, as a department that was before the Department of Health, that we use the government employee medical scheme to do this administration. But as a department, we have also, since that recommendation was there, not necessarily interrogated this and what it means, and see if at least they can assist us. Thank you. Next slide. To try and address the challenges which we have, and most of the things I've just mentioned, I think I've been alluding to point number one, where we've agreed with the Sergeant General that there must be a task team. And from the SEMS, the General Ndlovu is the leader. And from the GMD side, our Chief Director, who's handling the health care service, Mr. Koli Murolo, who is not here presently, is also, if you say, a lead person from our side. They are the ones, therefore, Chair, who are looking at the challenges I've just mentioned, so that they can then advise the Sergeant General and the DG of DMV to say these are the recommended solutions to what we're faced with. And, of course, that MOU which one has mentioned of 2015, which has not been reviewed, we're also looking at a possibility of reviewing that and see with the experiences we have and the challenges we're faced with, what is it that is not covered. We almost bend our fingers in terms of trying to find a service provider as a department to also assist us in providing this benefit to military veterans. And now what we have done, we've gone out for requests for information to see how best we can at least do this in terms of resolving the challenge we're faced with. And also with SAMS, Department of Health, we're looking at what kind of relationship do we need to have, and also to prepare for the future national health insurance so that the military veterans also can benefit, and what the implications are there as we move forward once that eventuality is realized. So that's one of the challenges. And of course, the question of the unknown, the question of this community of military veterans, it will be for all benefits, including this one, the at least every manage once we've sorted out our database in terms of finalizing and cleansing and verifying who those people are who are in that database. Our communication is not one of the best, especially with individual military veterans. We are trying our level best with the association and with the National Military Veterans Association, which is SANVA, to at least explain some of the challenges which we are faced with, and also try and link up with the military veterans and bring their level of awareness at a higher level than it is. Next slide. Chair, this is what we have tried at least to put together to share with you how this is done and what challenges we have and where we come from and how we intend to manage this going into the future, and with all the APC mitigating measures we are trying to put in place to address this. Thanks.
Thank you so much, General. Before I throw the item open, can we look at slide number 7 and slide number 8, just focus on the unknown. On slide number 7, I guess the figures of the authorized 17,748 on slide number 7 are the same figures with those that are reflected on page 9. Again, the number is the same, 7,748. But the unknown on page 9, on slide number 9, is 2,894. All right? Whereas the unknown on slide number 7 is 371. You've explained how it came about that you ended up with 371. But it's not clear now how the figure rises from 371 to 2894. I guess it refers to the same category of people.
Luckily, sir, of course, my specialist in this field of trying to compile this slide, which is a very important for me to explain. But if I'm not doing justice,
Chair, I'll ask Caroline Mungale to just assist me. Chair, for the first one, we're using the 2011 directive of the minister, where we ended up with that figure. that's what we're saying, then that's what we have. And then the one of 94, it's explained in my paper as those who have not updated their details but are registered as mental person and do not appear on the CPR list. If you can add something, Caroline.
Thanks, Chair. The slide 9, the 2894, if you look at the heading, it talks about military veterans per province who have been authorized. And the 2894, all those that are registered in the database, but we do not have information as to from which province do they come from. The unknown is in result of where do they live. But we know who the military veteran is, and we know their ID numbers. We just don't know their place of residence, and hence the unknown. And also, it talks to the fact that the DG was talking to, that we are requesting military veterans to come and update their details. And this is that number that when we started the database, they came in an Excel spreadsheet. So they haven't come yet to update their details.
Thanks. All right. Okay, colleagues, it's now open for discussion. And I note you, Honorable Mage. I note you, Comrade, Honorable Shelembe. I note you, Comrade Mare, Honorable Mare. In that order, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, when you were reading in the, was it in the Act itself? You said something about identity cards that must be issued by the department. And I'm just checking on the Act itself, GIA name 2011. I haven't seen an identity card from that department. And I don't think there's even anything in the pipeline in relation to that. And I think that could make life very easy, because it was even said that, I mean, the process of referring military veterans to the military hospitals that we have, I think something was said, they must be checked by military doctor or SAMS before they can go there, not by any other doctor. Otherwise, they are going to pay, if I understood you well. So maybe if there's an identity card, something can be arranged. It's unlike if somebody simply goes there, because the doctor wouldn't be having the first number or so. Somebody can understand. I mean, if for the benefit of public transport, that might be easy to do. But if we don't even have an identity card at this time, I was just thinking, because this thing is in the Act, if somebody can take the department to court, because now you are saying you don't have money, you will have to pop it out, because it means you are breaking the law. And I should think it mustn't come up to that extent. I mean, to that extent, identity card, at least those that are on the CPR, why can't you simply do that? You see, for me, it's like those departments that still don't have the ramp for wheelchairs. Department of Government. Why shouldn't they be taken to court? So I was just suggesting that at least you do something about the identity card. At least. I don't think it's that very expensive. And maybe to explain, or if you say a military veteran must be referred by somebody from SAMHSA, and we know very well that SAMHSA doesn't have a footprint anywhere. What are we actually saying? And in general, there was this situation of a military veteran last time from Zanin. Who was at one military. He was transported there, but when he was discharged, they said he must see to finish. And he had a hip fracture. And I talked to you about it. And they phoned the parents or the relatives to come and pick him up. The relatives didn't have money and transport to go and pick him up. I was wondering what would have happened if he was not collected. Would they have chucked him out? Or because they consistently phoned or come and take your person here. I think that is cruel. And the hospital itself said this person can go in what we term a private car. You need a buggy with a mattress at the back. But they had discharged it. So I mean some of these things, those are urgent issues that we must look at. I mean transportation. This person can't get into a taxi. He can't even get into what is termed a private car, and he's discharged. And he was there for 3 weeks while the relatives were still looking for money and transport. I think we are humiliating the military veterans. Maybe some of that can be arranged. I mean, just to get an ambulance and not to take this person home. Take this person to the nearest way where he was transported from. Take him to Polokwane, and then the parents or the relatives will see what will happen. So I was just saying some of these things, I mean, even if we say there are no funds, some of these things must just be done. Unless we are saying these people must just die. And I don't think that is good enough. Even if they die, they must die with some sort of dignity. just in passing, Chairperson, slide number 10. Very interesting that when you look at the number of the veterans from SADF, there are so many of them. Maybe even double those of MK. But I see MK there, is the ones that are dying are double SADF. What's happening there? If there's any explanation, I don't seem to understand that. Thank you, Jefferson.
thanks, Marushalem.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question will relate to the clauses that you read, you type of in the Military Veterans Act of 2011, where you were describing who are actually the military veterans. Chairperson, I've got a concern that there are some, there is an organization called South African Cape Corps Military Veteran Association. And that organization, wrote a letter to the minister requesting to be recognized. And then there is a letter, I think, written on 10th of October, about 2018, in which, the acting director is saying on behalf of the minister that this, the South African Cape Corps is now recognized. And now checking now in terms of the Act, whether this, is going to be considered and included and recognized as military veterans. But I'm trying to get the understanding from you that you are recognizing the structure, or you are recognizing that there is a South African Cape Corps. Then the second one, I see, in the slide number 8, where you say the average cost per annum per military veterans was estimated at 3,352. However, reality indicated that in 2018, the DNVS spent an average of about 16,250 rand per military veteran. I think there is a difference when a patient or a person is taken to the private hospital and to the public hospital. Also to, as we speak of the South African Military Health Services. Now, have you looked at it, where isn't that the reason to have so much difference between 3,000 to 17,000 result from people who are being taken to private, public facilities as a reason? Then if it is so, is it possible to consider prioritizing having, these facilities in other provinces to reduce the cost, of people going to the private health, facilities? I'm just looking at, because the difference is very, very, very huge for someone to understand, from 3,000 as your estimate and to 16,000. You know, I would appreciate if you can tell me where, do you think, just on your own, why do you differ so much at the end, of the financial year? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Honourable Mare.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to raise some issues, and I think some of that we have touched on yesterday as well, and that starts with slide number 5. And if I read that, I said to me, this is a so unfair situation on military veterans. Because first of all, they don't know what is the limitations in terms of referral in that second bullet. It refers to where there's limitations. Military health services outsource some healthcare services. But they wouldn't know which that is. So in other words, they first have to get to various taxis to get to a military hospital to be then to be referred back, and then the cost actually starts. That is, for me, it is unfair. We don't even know that. How would they know? What are these services where there's limitations? In the next one, it also refers to where they must pay for certain costs. And I think that is That is an unfair and a very, very unfortunate, you know, situation. We as a government, and I speak now collectively of government, have got various systems. We've got the Department of Welfare, the SASSA system, where people get a grant, but then they can still go to any provincial or government hospital and get free services. So why do we have a situation where military veterans, their system cannot be integrated similar to that? Remember what happens in any rural area, because we're talking very much about rural areas versus urban areas. What happens now when a patient of government or the province must now be transported hypothetically from Beaufort West? It is a government hospital transport vehicle that they get in and they get transported for free to Cape Town. Why can that not be extended to military veterans as well? Because it's for medical purposes, and the other patients to government hospitals are also for medical purposes. I cannot understand why an MOU cannot be extended with incorporation between government departments to also include that, because that military veteran is in that same situation as that person that goes to a clinic or a provincial hospital and that gets referred from that hospital to a specialist in the urban or the cities. Why can that not be done? I cannot understand that. Also, we have referred yesterday, and I know that there's a problem with sick bays, but we're supposed to have a sick bay in every base. Now, there are medical personnel, hopefully a doctor, but at least a nurse with substantial knowledge about healthcare. Why can that military veteran not go to that sick bay and then be referred to a specialist? Why does he have to go first, take all the cost and go to one of the three military hospitals and then be referred and then wasting a lot of time and money? I cannot understand that, and that refers also to that slide 11. And even all of those, I just cannot understand, because my view is, if there's a will and if there's cooperation, it should be extended to others than just those who are receiving it now. There's no reason, because a clinic you have in every village, in every town, wherever. Why can that not be extended? Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much. Over to your colleagues.
Thanks, sir. We will then share some of the responses, chair, in terms of the question raised. I will say, please, General, look at you when we begin to talk about the transportation part of it, and what experiences do you have in terms of managing that? And also the question of the cost estimate, I think I will just give at least our own understanding, but you'll have to also to try and manage that. And you will also assist us in terms of the referral processes, because our understanding is that your doctors would be doing that. And now the question is it doable? Better than that. And also the question of the own payment, I'll try at least to give my own understanding of some of the challenges in terms of the other public hospitals, in terms of military veterans, their own perceptions in terms of that. And then of course you will just, from my team, just in case I get stuck and I miss any other at least a question raised, please don't hesitate to provide a cover-up. So with the first question in terms of the ID card, I think we have not managed to produce those cards. And now we have entered into an arrangement with Department of Transport, because it's one of the benefits we've got to look at. And the DG of Transport is very passionate about this, helping the military veterans. then yes, even at least have gone into the MOU which was just signed, and we've got a steering committee which is looking at that. And one of the most important things as a pilot project, we look at KwaZulu-Natal and we look at Gauteng. And we have identified military veterans, at least we talk about real military veterans, not the youngsters. Looking at the people who are in the ages of 60, 70, with the CC, 200 per province. But then we're looking at the issue of how then does the driver get to know that's a military veteran? That's what became a question. And then it told us that we need an ID card. So this is what then we are looking at. And we think probably we'll be able to have a sense before the end of the calendar year. What does it take to make this? If it was a private sector, this would be able to do it just tomorrow. Why one is making this statement? We came across the company which has produced the South African ID cards, which is listed as a company in the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, and they have produced our own IDs. And therefore, what we are looking for is not that different. And also, it would give us coverage in terms of that. But of course, we cannot necessarily go direct to them because the supply chain management would require us to go this direction, that direction, that direction. But we are looking at this because they have already got a footprint, they've done something in government, and they're working with other government departments, and they've got the capability, and they've got their own factory in South Africa. But of course, we are looking at that.
So it's critical.
It's critical.
Why can't we give ourselves a time frame so that we can't be looking at it for the next 10 years?
I was saying, Chair, in terms of the ID card, we are going to be informed by this transport arrangement because it's with us a lead, and we're saying before the calendar year, we should be able to say this is the route we're taking, and we produce this.
All right. So we give ourselves until the end of the financial year so that we can come back on it.
Thanks.
Sure. Okay.
Thanks.
Just
a minute
as it is.
Chairperson?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we've got the government printing works. It's an entity of government. And instead of going to the market, can get a waiver at least to go straight. It's ours. It belongs to the government. And I don't think there's anybody who can refuse to give a waiver when it comes to military veterans.
What print is that?
Government printing works.
Printing works.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
So I don't think there's anybody who can refuse to do that unless you do nyagama guerrilla you molaya. I think that can be done. Thank you.
All right. So we are giving a timeline so that we can have this going on endlessly. So we're giving the department until the end of the financial year.
The government printing works will look at that going forward. And then in terms of own reference, I think, General, you will have to look at that. But in terms of the legal application, why we have failed to do that, I think we've taken note of that. And for general, in terms of the transport out of SEMS, you will look at that. And the number of those who have passed on, general, you can at least indicate from the medical point of view why is it happening. Except to say, Chair, that this is not necessarily a factual situation, but it's just probably trying to relate who these people are and where they've been. If you've been in the better part of the continent, especially in certain countries, you realize that people coming from the environment where they're not exposed to mosquitoes, then they find themselves in mosquito-infested areas. Then when they come back, sometimes those kind of things stay with them. And they also get impacts in them in terms of challenges they face. And of course, the condition they've been living under. Now, coming back after so many years, also that it is an impact. And of course, it's informed by the kind of support they had at the time and even now. So the SADF would have had at least some of the best system, better than the NSF, to support their people, even in Angola and in Namibia. So they had a better system than this. So that has got impact in terms of one's body. But General, you can cover the other areas.
Thank you very much, General Mgwebe. I'm going to start with two issues that I think are of extreme interest for academic reasons. The first one is about the MK versus SADF, because I think that should be a study that we, as a firm, together with the DMV, we can actually go back into the records and try and compare the two, and we come with a scientific reason, including what General Mgwebo is saying, that why is it like that. So I think that's something that needs to be done. At this stage, you can't say why. We can only speculate. You might also find that the number of people that are registered as SADF here might be a very small portion of the total SADF veterans. So although the numbers might be high, you might find that it's maybe 10 times. And if you look at the mortality, it might actually be very high. But I think that's an area of study that we will pursue together with the DMV. When you look at the other one is the cost per military veteran. On face value, the 16,000 is still too little. The 65 million that is budgeted for the military veteran is too little, because we have a lot of the retired members that are catered for through the Regular Force Medical Continuation Fund. The profile in terms of the people is the same, is more or less the same as the military veterans, because they are older people who have retired and all that. There, you find that on a monthly basis, we pay something like close to 30 million to take care of more or less the same number of people. But I think we also have to study that and distill the factors and come out with figures to say exactly how much it costs to do this. Because hidden in this in these factors are a lot of the patients who actually do not come to the military veterans, because it's a lot of trouble. They end up going to local hospitals and all those things. So I think those are the two factors. Now, coming to...
So before you run away from this item, because it's critical, because we're dealing with budget here, and the 16,350 rand, is it of what number? What is numerator? What numerator are you using there? Are you using the 17,748 that is people qualified to receive the health care services? Or are you using the actual number of people who crossed your institutions or your service providers in the year 2018-2019, all right? The 70,000 is just a population, all right? And I guess it's not everyone that visited, that received the services in 2018-2019. The question is, how many received these services in 2018-2019, so that I can understand how you arrive at the 16,350 rand per person?
It's a question of the second bullet, where we're saying that on a yearly basis for the people of part of the 792 who have access to benefit. And then if we look at the question, which is like 8,
so then
5,792 on an annual basis, this is the figure we seem to be talking to. And then we then also look at the question of the third bullet, which speaks to 107 million in the 1819 financial year. And then you take the accruals. Then
minus the accruals.
Minus the accruals.
Then it
and then
you,
then you divide
right.
then the whatever the sum mm-hmm. of that, or the with that 5,000, and then it gives you that kind of average in terms of 16,350, which was just a rough it's a calculation and trying to have a sense of what we're taking. That's why we call it an average.
Okay. Over to you. Thanks, General.
Thank you. As a talking about the transportation, because that also goes to also include the referral, the referring of patient. The system is supposed to work in a way that a person is ill, you go to the nearest sick bay, and then you are seen there, and a decision is made whether you need specialized services, and then you are referred to the hospitals. That's how the basic service is supposed to work. That's also how it works for the regular force people. But then, if you go, most of the regular force people, all the regular force people belong to a specific unit. So, for example, if you are at the Palaboro, you'll go to the sick bay, then you go either to 5 Reiki or to 7 Sai. And then your unit will organize transportation for you to go to one military hospital, and transportation to bring you back to your unit where you started. That system exists for regular force members, but it doesn't exist for military veterans. That's where the problem stems, because if each military veteran was allocated to a specific unit, then it could be easy for us to say, you as a unit, you are responsible for organizing the transport back and forth of the patient. That is one of the issues that we are engaged with as the task team, to say, how do we overcome some of the problems. I have been assured by my colleague that the patient in one meal was ultimately taken care of. In any case, one mean we wouldn't have checked the patient out, because that would have been malpractice in terms of patient care. We would have made sure that the patient can be moved from point A to point B without worsening the condition of the patient. Thank you.
Thanks, Jen. In terms of the second question for the South African Cape Cod Association. The challenge with these associations, most of them, especially this SADF one, which they call it CMVO. Now, it's a combination of quite a number of bodies within this form or the old SADF, where you have some coming from the Army, some coming from the Air Force. Within the Army itself, they would have their gunners, they would have their infantry, their association. So this, now, the colored community, having interacted with them, I would call them the colored community because that's where they come from, although they call them Cape Cod. The first thing I asked them when they call themselves Cape Cod, well, the Cape, the old Cape is known how big it is. Then does that mean the colored community which is outside the Cape, are they still part of this? They said yes. Two, now, if then this is the case, why are you breaking away from your mother body, which is your CMVO for the SADF? Because whatever you do, you have served, you are a veteran, but you serve under the SADF, and this is your formation we recognize. Then they gave me a long history of the Cape, and they gave me who they are, and they believe that they are at least the aborigines of this part of the world. And then they were recognized as an association, but their origin and they are part of CMGO, they are part of SADF. They are not going to become an extra. but as long as they have served in the Defense Force and there's proof to that, they can call themselves whatever. So this is probably my response in terms of who these people are there for. Even if they remain as Cape Cod, Cape Cod, or even if they remain as SADF, as long as they have served, they are the military as individual and they are in the database. That's what we are dealing with as a department. General, I think you have dealt with the cost estimate. I think for us, we ended up with a lower figure because we were not that well versed with the costing part of it. And the third question in terms of the reference, I think I'm not sure that you've dealt with that, General. But except to say, in terms of the military veterans themselves, why they seem to be inclined to go to the military hospital is a perception. Because they, as military veterans, associate themselves with military hospitals. So they would love to be seen to be treated in a military hospital. Although there might be a hospital in the same province, that's a perception. And also when they go to these public hospitals, then they just become ordinary South Africans. They don't receive the kind of treatment they are expecting, because when they go there, they're expecting that you come in, you're a military veteran, you introduce yourself, there should be a desk which then deals with you, and then you are quickly at least managed, pass the chew, and off you go. Therefore, they seem to not to be comfortable with going to an ordinary hospital where they just follow the line and then they are not necessarily prioritized. So these are some of the challenges from their side. Although, again, working with SEMS, working with the Department of Health, who are looking at, although Department of Health is not necessarily inclined to follow our thinking, where you can have a health desk and you can handle them, which is a military veterans health desk, you can handle them, you can at least fast track them. Then in terms of the ethics of the doctors, they find it difficult. So we're still engaging in that debate, which is not yet finalized. I'm not quite sure whether then I've responded to all the questions.
I'm not too sure if the question relating to you having a memorandum of understanding with the Department of Health has actually been covered. Has it been covered at part? So that the military veterans are not only limited to receiving services provided by SAMS or through SAMS, they can also go to the other facilities of government for healthcare services. That one being answered.
The response to that, Chair, is that presently the task team is also mandated to link up with the Department of Health. We have already at least tried to engage, and we've given a person at the level of a DDG on this other side, a Dr. Pillay, to work on what is it that can be done to at least make it a point that they also come on board in assisting and supporting military veterans, and how best to do that.
Yes,
just this one thing, and I know that, you know, we have got the pre-94 and post-94 situation, but often you don't have to go and reinvent the wheel. Some of the systems was there. Whether we agree with the old commando system, I know when we were obliged to be part of a commando system, there was a system that you could enter and access the services. I find it difficult that now suddenly our military veterans is just floating there somewhere and it doesn't belong to, you've indicated, to a base. But that do certainly belongs to a group. So whether that's a group or a base, how you then allocate them to that base, that's an administration function. So you must just be able to use old systems and current systems, allocate them and provide the services to them wherever they are. Because General McGwebe, you're quite right that sometimes I feel that the military veterans is not giving the respect that they deserve. But I mean, often you find people in the rural areas that say We just want to have medical services, access to medical services. And because we cannot afford a taxi to city, you know, we want to access it here. And here are provincial hospitals, here are clinics, but they are not afforded that opportunity.
See, that's a problem. And that's a short stick we are giving to the military veterans. Mm-hmm. It's a service given to them in terms of their law. And through our administrative delays, most of the military veterans who are in need of these services find themselves, without the services. I mean, you said, General, most people, especially in government, I mean, they have medical aid. So this issue of medical services, healthcare services, is not an issue to most of them, to most of us. It's not an issue. If I'm ill, sick at any time, I can go to any doctor and get treated there. But we have these people, very destitute, some of them, who made huge sacrifices for the country to be where it is now. And they're being pushed from pillar to post. Not only is the service limited, but it is unavailable to some. In fact, to most of them. Because if whenever they need to access the services, they must go via SAMS, and SAMS' footprint is not everywhere in the province. And I mean, it's we're creating a burden over another burden. Can't this be expedited, please? I mean, it's. I know some of them. I mean, I know. They're in a situation that even their relatives who should actually be, you know, knocking on the doors of the authorities are not in a position to do so because they don't have the means. But when they get frustrated by like this, then it becomes terrible. The reason why we're putting this issue on the table for discussion is precisely of how critical and important it is to the lives of those people. And please, let's give ourselves, I mean, you can't even need that interdepartmental team that that was set up that can just go on and on and on and on for a very long time. Can't we give ourselves a time frame? We push. If when we see that they are not responding to treatment, we get the ministers, I mean, our minister to talk to the minister on the other side to put this thing on the table and get it finalized once and for all. I mean, there must come a point where you say, at your level, you can't push further than this, and therefore it's got to be escalated. So we can't be dragging this matter on and on and on and on and on. And just to pass, can they be known? You see, they are known because the 371 came up as a result of that project by the minister. But there is other unknown, and the 2,894, in other words, the 371. Is part of the 2,894 that is unknown. All right, can they be known? You see, I'm not saying let's do it now, but if the department did what the regs are saying must be done, must be done. They followed the regs. There's an application form attached to the regs that says, I mean, it says. A military veteran is clause 13 of the reg, clause 13, subclause 2. It says a military veteran who, in terms of sub-regulation 1, qualifies for healthcare services, may, in accordance with regulation 19, apply to the department for such care services. Then the sub-regulation 3 says the healthcare services may be conducted or contemplated in sub-regulation 1 must be conducted at a public healthcare facility, but may also be conducted at a public healthcare facility when a public healthcare facility is unable to conduct the healthcare services, or a private healthcare services facility is the only facility available in the area. Basically, in terms of the regulation, this thing was meant to be wall-to-wall. I mean, to have these services generally available to military veterans. So can we find a way of dealing with this? But on the unaccountability of those unaccountable, I think let's give ourselves a timeline and say whoever is unaccountable at this stage must be accountable. No, his details, his or her details must be found so that he is then accounted for. At least let's give ourselves a date. Let's say by the end of the year. We're keeping a very long time, very generous. It's information you can get if you the will is very strong in a month, but we're giving you up until the end of the financial year to get everybody unaccounted for. Every person who requires the services must go through the form. It's by law, it's there in the regulations. The form must be in the file so that we have the record of each and every person whom we spend money on. Finish and clear. And, Mote?
Yeah. Maybe just to throw some ideas so that they don't struggle, because I think even those that they indicated that they are unknown in terms of their provinces or provinces as to where they belong to, I think they should then begin engaging not only on IT with Home Affairs and printing works. Also, Home Affairs has got a system where they've got all our IDs, they know where we come from. So they must begin to engage Home Affairs in that aspect, so that they've got their IDs, they don't know where they belong, but they can get that information from Home Affairs, from their system. And secondly, on the identification that you want to implement for military veterans, I am thinking that you can also engage, because you don't want an identity system that will be interrupted easily, because it's going to create problems for us. For an example, some of us that has got driver's license, we've got a driver's license that when you are looking for a PDP, they make an addition to that particular license of yours. They don't give you another license with you can use the same card with a PDP. So to some extent, you must engage Home Affairs to say you can use their very same smart card, ID card, but with an additional information that says this person is a military veteran. Then you don't have to go look for service providers elsewhere. Once you have got that agreement, they can print those ID. The very same ID will indicate that Mage is a military veteran. Then you save a lot of costs. Yeah, thank you. That's my submission.
Please, can that happen? Does that close the discussion on this item, colleagues? I think it does. All right. And so we in other words, we have an appointment. We're making an appointment on this aspect. In other words, the returning date is after the end of the financial year. All right. Where we revisit the issues that I've spoken about. The issues I've spoken about is to make the unknown known. In other words, that there must not be a single person who's unaccounted for because of spending money on him or her. All right. And the two, where we've asked you to come back, is the the identification card. It's a requirement in terms of the law, and so we expect you to come back on that. And the third point we are expecting you to come back on is on extending the services, the health services beyond SAMHSA facilities. In other words, to, you know, entering into a memorandum of understanding with the Department of Health, so that these services are wall to wall, so to speak, because there is a clinic, there is a hospital, there is a, in addition, you can also go to private facilities, healthcare facilities. But the question is, is the route through SAMHSA, or it can be through the Department of Health? But that depends on the memorandum of understanding that you enter with the Department of Health. Now the same thing you've done with SAMHSA, you do this with you do it with health, so that we don't get our colleague, I mean the military veterans, frustrated by the administrative processes. All right, that then close the issue. Can we then quickly move to getting an update on the housing front? Again, the issue there, if recall, you also have people who were unaccounted for, all right, and unknown, and you see one, two. As a result of unknown, the human settlement was actually saying, look, we can't link these fellows to a project, because the list exists at the national level. It cannot be broken down by province and by district and by local municipalities. So that if there's a project in local municipality A, you know, and we're then able to link whoever is in need to the project that is coming up. The same thing in another provinces, in another province within the district, in a local municipality, X, were then able to link those colleagues to that project. All right? So that you don't have a list that exists at the national level that can help even those that are supposed to be receiving the benefit. Because the next thing, you are in Gauteng and you are told that you have a house, your house is in KwaZulu-Natal, or you're in Gauteng in another district, and you are told that your house will come up in another district. In one district, you are told that the house will come up in another district, and you have to leave your support structure now to another district for this house. But if that was broken down by the provinces, by the district, local municipalities, it will help. Has that been worked out with the Department of Human Settlement, so that it then is left to them to find the projects for those people? And over to your colleagues on that one.
Thanks, Chair. We have at least managed working with Human Settlement, and of course from also our information within our system, to have a sense of the people who have applied, and the ones who've been allocated, and the ones who've been applied. And also we've got that information per former force, and also including per province. So we've got the information to that. I would be corrected that this information has been available, including the names of the individuals, to your own self-check.
Okay.
Just to give a sense of the people who have registered the need for a house per province, without going, and of course, that was, we've got a figure of 3,597. These are the people who have registered in per province. And out of that, we have the ones which have been processed. And having been processed, out of that 3,597, we've got possible individuals who are eligible, which takes us to 2,692. So these are the people who have not necessarily been provided with us, and we know who they are, and we know them in province. So we've got a sense, and we're going to come in settlement in terms of planning going forward and prioritizing these individuals.
Thank you.
That is in terms of those who are looking for housing. And their names are available set. And we are also looking at those who have received houses since we have started. Now, our figure goes to 1,130. And again, that's per province and that's per former force. We've got those individuals. And also, in terms of gender, we're able, if you said, to say so many ladies. And of course, it's quite clear the number of ladies, it's out of the 1,130, we're talking about 66 ladies. This what I suppose. These are the ones we have received since we started with this exercise per province. Now, the ones which have been declined, yes, Chair, in terms of application, we are talking about, what's it figure now? Let me check before I repeat myself. The ones which have been declined because of income, that's that means, yes, Chair, you are talking about. We're talking about 296 people who have been declined. And then in terms of those who have passed on, we're talking about five people, and some own properties. So this is what we are talking about, that if you've got a property, then again, this challenge of the property, sometimes you would find a veteran, the property probably belongs to a family.
So we don't have that report?
For presentation, yes, because we thought that it was for submission, and we have it is a setup yourself. So we didn't prepare it here for presentation.
It's fine.
Yeah.
So that we'll share the report. If there is any need of further information, we'll write to you. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let us look at what our minutes.
Would go through our notes compared to what you have been able to prepare. If there's any outstanding information that we require of you, we'll then send you the letter informing you that we need more on the presentation. I think let's take that as sufficient. Thank you so much. Yes, Honourable Martin.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to ambush the general whilst he's still here. I'm just interested in. He was still saying something very interesting. If there's a family property, I think I would be interested in that one. And the means test, what are the parameters for the means test? How much must be a person? Is it a combined salary of the veteran and spouse, or is it the veteran himself or herself? So, and where exactly do you apply the ministers? Is it only in housing, or does it also apply in health? Thank you, Chairperson.
All right, General. Wait a minute. Can you confirm? You want to just to check ministers now as a police?
Yeah.
Let's talk ministers as a police. All right. And then probably use the example of housing, because you raised it, as the application of the policy, because I think it will differ from benefit to benefit.
Thanks, sir. In terms of the housing, it's the combined, in terms of the family, it takes us to 125,000. If that's the income, then you don't qualify. That's 125. So that's the kind of means test. And also, if you've got property registered in your name, sometimes being the Afghan people, then you went to exile, you come back, and then the parents are not there, probably the house is registered on your name. And within that household, quite a number of people are staying there. But if it's registered on your name, but it's a family one, in the system of the human settlement, it shows your name, then you don't qualify. Then we advise them to do, you rather give it to the other family member so that it's not on your name. And then the system will show that you don't own property.
The qualification criteria is on page 9 of the regulations. It's regulations 14. It's exactly as what General is explaining it, okay? And so at least, and page 9, are you on it, Honourable Member? Mike?
That's right.
Yes. So on the housing front, I think that is spelled out. And on the health front is also here. On the health front is also here. All right. I think we want to save you your comments on this one, right? So which one has not been explained, Mike? Let me. I might have forgotten. Are you covered now?
Yeah, no, it was only the men's test.
Only the men's test.
That's right.
All right. Okay. So Honourable Mark is covered on that point. All right. So we'll have this information available. We'll integrate it. We'll then come back to you should we need more information. With that, what remains for us is to thank you, both General Dove, General Dove and the team, for interacting with us today. Over to you. Thanks. Sorry, you may leave if you...
Yes, thank you. Thank you.